Yeah, I think it's that. I mean, every Aikido move that we make to put up a defense or an explanation or a place I've come from or a place I'm going to and the reasons for coming from and going to and what I hope to gain once I get there. And then once you're there, you're always thinking about where you'll be next. And so you never really know what you've accomplished.
I read something about like understanding you were a chimp. You want to be a better chimp or whatever.
Bingo.
Yeah. Yeah. Chimp improvement is not the way, they said.
Chimp improvement is not the way.
I feel trapped in that so much, you know.
Well, that's why it's worthwhile to have these conversations.
Good. Okay, good.
Really, to cut right to it. You see? Again, you know, you can do what the lovely folks are doing next door, which is loving each other, which of course is, you know, I mean, I'm not worthy. They're doing a lot of love over there. I'm not worthy of that. And then you can call on all kinds of seen and unseen experts, mm-hmm. cosmic experts, whether astrological, astronomical, you know, ascended masters, departed Buddhas. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable how many so-called voices of authority you can turn to. Mm. The Book of Urantia, and it goes on and on and on and on, more than anyone could possibly deal with in 1,000 lifetimes.
Right, right.
That's how wide the scope is of call it suffering and the resources to respond to suffering. I mean, it's an infinity.
Yeah, yeah.
So part of the reason that we get frozen is not necessarily because of reluctance, but because we don't know what to do next now that the bookstore has been, you know, opened.
Yeah.
What? And we want to be efficient. I don't want to spend my time reading 1,000 books just so that the 1,001 book was the one I should have read,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's part of the weird thing we have. We're like really open in a certain way to respond to a mystery, and yet we're thwarted in really curious ways that aren't necessarily up to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And often when you don't understand, you know, those mysteries. I mean, when you think about how you don't understand those mysteries, that's when I get, I don't know.
Well, of course. So we become, not even become, you could say even ahead of time, we're wary mm-hmm. of experience itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Just of the root of experiencing that I'm sentient and I've had a life so far.
Yeah.
I'm really wary of it. And so sometimes we think that, well, I'm really aiming for a certain kind of satisfier, but I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
Would it be, you know, money, fame, lack of fear, a great job, the perfect haircut, you know, people I can be in relationship with? We're not even sure what to do to occupy a fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And that weariness it can be very disorienting because we don't know how to heal it or cure it.
Yeah, it's like you don't actually want the more that you think you want. You want the all that you don't understand.
That's as good a book title as I've ever heard.
Yeah. I love writing.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to be here. And I'm going to be super closed off for an extrovert, for the first couple times. I'm hoping there'll be a first couple times. But yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll all see. We'll see how it all goes.
Yes.
How weird it is.
I'm sure.
But here's what's really scary. You see, we typically think that the satisfiers that we might like to have mm-hmm. are in our future.
Okay.
And that the accomplishment of those satisfiers are dependent upon either others or something that I do or don't do. Mm-hmm. So now I'm in conditional mind. My satisfiers are in the future, and there's no clear path through my will to manifest them.
Mm-hmm.
And that weariness pours in again.
Yeah.
You see, that kind of like, oh, it's just so vague why I can't get to where I'd like to get to. Even though I'm not sure of where I'd like to get to or how I want to feel once I get there. Okay, so that vague, that's ego. EGO mm-hmm. is the vagueness of not really being sure where you've been, where you are, where you're heading, and or why.
Mm-hmm.
And now we cover it up. we compensate for that luscious but disturbing vagueness by wearing a mask and convincing ourselves and everyone else we have the pleasure to meet of, you know, what and who we're about.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't ever know. And yet the social contract is not to walk around like a benevolent zombie. You want to, you know, strut your stuff.
Yeah.
To, you know, to walk through life with like, your perfect incredulity, it would be a little strange.
It would.
It would. And yet, that's the fact.
Yeah.
So that adds to the vague again.
Mm.
Because the actuality of occupying sentience with no particular choice or will of your own is this curious incredulity.
Mm.
I don't know what the fuck is going on. In a big way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
In a really big way or a deep way.
Yeah.
I just, oh my God. That moment, that poignancy of I really, really, as deeply as possible today, don't know what's going on, that's a portal for liberation.
So it is, yeah.
It absolutely really is.
Yeah.
But it also, because it's so potent, it also spins us in back into vague.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's the same thing. I've come to the realization that I can't trust my own thoughts. I thought that was very scary at first. Then I thought, no, this is great. I don't have to be anyway at all. Now I'm just as confused.
Take the hat. You teach. You got this.
Yeah.
It's like, it's tough. What'd you call me for out of the other meeting? You guys got this.
It's tough. But the step that I've at least wanted to take for myself is to open up to learning about all spirituality.
Don't do that. Because right. If you do that,
really?
you'll end up back in the mire of vague. There is no spirituality.
No?
None worth pursuing.
Mm. Yeah. Well, no, thank you, because a lot of specifically religions.
They're beneath you. You've graduated from them, and you need to catch up with that fact.
Can we be on planes?
And it's not an ego thing.
Yeah, okay.
It's just not an ego thing. That wasn't a buttering up.
Yeah, no, it's yeah.
You've graduated beyond what the religiosity can possibly provide you.
Mm.
You've already seen through the myth of your own mind, of your own veracity. So why bury yourself back in the dead traditions of dead persons that are that stink? They have a stench.
Yeah.
You don't. So you are free. You are released already that quickly from the call of the need, not that you need to or need not, but there's nothing for you in the realm of representation. And all spirituality is just the iconization of the absolute. Why bother with the iconization of the absolute when you're, at least to my way of thinking, spirit is already completely sanguine to go direct?
I can't answer that question.
You needn't.
Yeah, no, idea. I don't think I need to.
Yeah, you needn't.
Yeah, that's good.
It could be really could save you a lot of time and money.
Yeah.
At a minimum. There could be other benefits too.
Like my mental health.
Yeah. That for sure is going. No one's coming out of that alive.
Okay.
Yeah. Now remember, your mental health, at least the way that you conceive of your mental health, and stop me if I'm being rude, because I can be.
Not easily offended.
Yeah. What you conceive as the stuff and weave of your mental health is just a lie pouring through the filter of your already baroque mental health.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you can't possibly know.
So what the hell
see?
Am I
doing? Yeah. See, right. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so see, this kind of approach is we're not relying on any authority, any ascended or other or abstraction or representation. We're not that concerned about the future, what to do about it, whether Mercury is retrograde or not, or whether Jupiter and Mercury are conjunct, or whether the full moon is supposed to be a high energy moon to keep your eye on the. You're like, no, that can take care of itself.
Hmm. Okay.
You see, so it's possible to release yourself from the profound seduction of all distraction.
Okay.
Secular, spiritual, temporal, spatial, creature. I mean, all of it. See, so your consciousness, though, you think, maybe you think, one thinks, oh, well, I am sentient, I am conscient, I am thought, I am the body, I am my memories, I occur in space-time, I am decisive, mm-hmm. I am vague, my mental health is sometimes up, sometimes down, sometimes I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can define yourself in a million ways, but those are all dreamt. They're dreamed in situ, meaning at present.
Yeah.
There's a word called autopoiesis, which basically is a, you know, kind of a nice quasi-psychiatric, you know, word to talk about the improvisational nature of present experience. Mm-hmm. It's just doing itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So what would happen if you just simply, you know, kind of notice without much effort or stress at all that, oh my goodness, sentience is truly doing itself. And anything I think about it is going to be a paltry representation mm-hmm. through one or a million filters that are either conditioned or karmic or expectant.
Yeah, yes.
And they're useless to you. Mm-hmm. So that can then mean as we lean into and then pass through a certain terror membrane. Mm-hmm. And yeah. The terror membrane is there, I don't know for what reason, a good reason, a bad reason, it doesn't matter. Yeah. As a durable sense of self confronts its own evaporative nature, it can be terrified. Mm. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Okay, so here you are moving, you know, with the wind, with whatever planets may be guiding you, or Dwal Kul, or whomever it is, and you get a sense of this impersonally appearing, acausal, atemporal, non-spatial sentience or consciousness. And it has no boundary. It's not asking anything of you. It's placing no demand upon you at all, nor is it imposing anything upon you. Mm-hmm. And it's not asking anything of you.
That sounds like a good place to be.
And here's, you know, uh-huh. here that is. That sounds like that. Excuse me, I'm being beckoned, but I'm not sure about you.
It's quite all right. No, it's got a lot to think about after that.
Yeah, keep up. So what we call mind is, you could say, the tendency to place oneself in a position of some kind of coordinates. The coordinates can be spatial coordinates, temporal coordinates, memory coordinates of mind, of body, of emotion, of sentiment, of belongings, of accoutrements, of future. So
speaking of the relationship you create for yourself with the world.
Yes. Okay. With the imagination of the world.
Yeah, well, yeah, whatever you create. Whatever,
yeah.
Yeah, whatever yeah. you want to see, of course.
That's right. And clearly we're not in charge of that filtration or that conditioning.
No, yeah.
Or if my mental health is like reliable this week or shit, not very reliable the next.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just read a book he gave me by Sam Harris, Free Will, and it's, you know, he goes over that point out. And these thoughts just seem to appear out of thin air. And,
yes.
You know, we can have control of, yeah, no, I don't want the banana, or I want the apple, or no, I'm going to pick the banana just despite that choice. You can't control
no.
that.
No, you can't yeah. outsmart an impulse that you've only become aware of after the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're always occurring subterranean.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
What you become aware of or are capable of processing through means and representation is always late.
That's right, yeah.
So Sam does a good job of dismantling certain aspects of what we would call, you know, being. Mm-hmm. He's focusing here on volition. All right, so that's an eraser, right? We've erased volition, mm-hmm. right? But most people don't even want to hear that. I mean, they're not even willing to step above, you know, near that, let alone beyond that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they just don't. They're just not ready to appreciate that one's present experience and all the balls that we are juggling and all the pleasure or pain we're deriving from life has nothing to do with our own volition or decisiveness. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's too fucking freaky. Mm. But that's just, he's just erasing one little tiny thing.
Yeah.
Because what else do you imagine you are? Not to single you out, but for any of us, what else do we imagine we are? In addition to, let's say, volition. What other superstitions of being are we under? Beliefs are whose influence we are under,
yeah,
that makes us imagine anything about anything.
Hmm.
Anything about anything. So not only is volition, really just a mirage of absenteeism, so is consciousness itself. Like, where's the lowest or least common denominator where your loyalty goes? Are you the function of anything? Are you body? Are you mind? Are you spirit? Are you volition or the absence of? Are you sensuality or sensorial? Are you consciousness? Which of these, word sets, and you're welcome to your own, of course,
mm-hmm,
how would you paint yourself and said, yeah, I am this, or I am made of this, or mm-hmm, I am beholding to this?
Mm-hmm. Nowadays it'd be pretty,
thin.
Funny.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's thin.
Yeah, it's nothing certain, that's for sure.
Nothing is certain, that's for certain.
Yeah, it is.
That's chapter 2 of the book.
Okay.
Your book. It's your book. So you might notice that consciousness acts in a predatory manner.
Mm-hmm.
It is always swooping down, talons cocked,
yep,
to orient itself according to one or many of these, scrolls of superstition.
Mm.
Oh, it's so droll. And yet, we're terrified if that were to cease through skillful contemplative means or spontaneously with no effort at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom, boom. Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah, you see, so the imagination of continuity as an individual, as a body, as a mind, as a history, as a bunch of qualities, is only imagined absolutely in situ or in presence.
Yeah.
And it's pretty thin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's say underneath all of these symptoms of imagining ourselves to be a body, mind, and space-time, dwelling on Earth in interesting times.
Low. No, yeah, let's give it a couple more.
What's the texture of your actual experience if it's not assigned to anything?
Hmm. Yeah, that's the question I find myself asking so many times. Finding the need to ask that question so many times.
If you have the need to ask it, then something sneaky is knocking at your door.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is capable of wiping your consciousness absolutely clean with no artifacts.
Mm.
When you take your dog to the crematorium, at least you get an urn and, some ashes.
Yeah.
When this takes you, there's neither urn nor ashes. That's how solemnly gone you are.
Hmm.
You think of it as a, just to be poetic, spiritual immolation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're speaking about this meditation?
No, meditation would be a thing.
Well, yeah, okay.
I'm speaking about whatever there's always been to speak about, which is the miraculous nature of this experience.
Hmm.
Refreshing and evaporating as a simultaneity with no duration. Refreshing and evaporating as a simultaneity with no duration. Every moment is absolutely brand new.
Hmm.
Never happened before, never will happen again.
True.
At the same quote time that it's brand new, it's already gone. It's dissolved. It doesn't last.
Yeah.
So there is no actual moment that you could say is in possession of duration.
Yeah.
It's just streaming novelty, which is evaporating as a simultaneity.
Completely impermanent.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
That's chapter 3.
Sweet, man.
Completely impermanent.
Move it along.
Completely impermanent. I mean, take it in. Like the Buddha said, you don't need this, and this, you know, to whack some consciousness shit. You just need one of these. Take one of these to its, you know, conclusion, and you're done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just any one of them. Pick any one of them, but walk it all the way back behind the scrim, and it'll just flatline you. Yeah.
That's cool.
Way cool.
This is cool.
It's way cool. Now, it's not nothing. The big dilemma, one of a few. Emptiness is form and form is emptiness. Well, let's see. I mean, I get the form part, or at least I think I do. Mm-hmm. Right? I have a vocabulary to articulate the five senses. And the movement of thought, mind, or abstraction includes memory, psychological time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got that. I mean, you know, the unending crescendo of apparent first-hand experience. Conscious contact. Irrefutability. Mm-hmm. Right?
That's right.
But it turns out it's empty.
Mm-hmm.
That's the puzzle. I get the form part, but the empty part... No, because consciousness is so predatory.
It won't let you.
It won't let you.
Or it won't let that just be.
That's right.
Yeah.
Not because it has it out for you, but that's what it does.
Mm-hmm.
You do what you do. This does what it does. This does what it does. That's what consciousness does. Mm-hmm. It just like an insatiable raptor. It keeps going after prey, making it appear as if this isn't empty.
Yeah.
Seduces you with the hypnosis of personal or somatic continuity.
What does somatic mean?
Body.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you think you were here a moment ago, but you can't find it, can you? You can never find a moment ago. Mm-hmm. You can recall with a great confidence.
Yeah.
You can have sorrow and despair and regret and joy and tears of love and emotions galore and moods and impulses galore as you contemplate what happened prior to now. And when is all of that occurring? Well, it's happening presently. And all of the symptoms that are accompanying it are also occurring presently. So you fool yourself into thinking that you can remember the past when you can't. You're just having a deja vu in presence. So anytime you think you're anything at all, you're having a deja vu in presence.
Mm. But the ability to memorize, or remember rather, specifically the ability of memory, that's not something to be... that's not something to be seen as...
You needn't refuse or refute or celebrate anything.
True, but if you dismiss...
You needn't dismiss anything.
Oh.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Everything is piercing a veil of implication.
Okay, let me phrase it another way.
Yeah.
Would it not be something to say that that memory, you know, the fact that, yes, you can recall it with this type of certainty that you have or you think you have or whatever.
Yeah.
Would it be wrong to say that that's I can remember when I got here, I was very I'm still nervous about it, but I was very nervous about meeting anybody new or having a new experience whatsoever. I can remember I can remember that I was nervous, so that's accurate to say. I mean, that is accurate, is it not?
It's up to you. Look, there's no, if I may be bold,
okay.
There's no actual secular reality that is true at all. Therefore, any way you feel like feeling about the way that you feel.
Yeah.
Is good.
And maybe, like, discussing a specific moment of the way I felt about something was the best. Like, if I, you know, I stubbed my toe on the way in, and sure. Oh, I remember that. That definitely had. So isn't there something like that? You know, there's something to say in that memory is accurate most of the time. So it's something that.
Let's say yes.
Okay.
Let's say yes. Take a breath, then dismantle it. So this way you don't have to keep saying yes.
Okay.
I'm like, I got you. Yeah. Now let's dismantle it.
Okay.
Right? This way we don't have to keep pretending to prove something that's not true.
Okay.
Yeah. It's lighter, right?
Yeah, I keep trying to get it. And
yeah, see,
it's not
yeah.
worth getting.
Well, if I ask you to, and I am asking you throughout our conversation, though informally or behind the scenes, I'm asking you to please consider the texture of present experience, the texture of it, which can include thought and association, but also as just as felt presence.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you're vibrant, right? You're sentient, alive, you're holding your body, you're comfortable, maybe you're nervous, your mind. I mean, you're engaged, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you're surfing this. So so you're just like, yeah, fuck it, I'm fucking surfing this, man. Fuck you, I'm surfing this.
I try.
It's really that simple.
Yeah.
Fuck you, I'm surfing this shit.
Yeah.
Sweet.
It's most of my life.
Yeah.
Winging it.
Just winging it. Winging it, surfing it. That's right. How with what quality of articulation can you capture this presence?
I could do a whole bunch of things. I could speak about it. I could write about it.
Yeah.
I could take photos.
Yeah.
I could have...
Right. Right.
At least.
Yes, you could indulge in a million artistic... You know, yeah. representations.
Yeah.
But no matter what the representation is, written about, spoken about, felt, photographed, et cetera, whatever was occurring when you were giving your attention to it is already 10,000 years ago.
Because
mm-hmm. you're just continuing, like everything is continuing to stream in absolute novelty.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand.
Okay. Now, that memory, the way that you were talking about it, is great. I don't have any quarrel with how you were occupying memory.
Now I understand what you... See, when you said about... oh, sorry, I'm getting confused now. But when you had said, when you were talking about memory and saying that, it, you know, oh, you think you can remember the past but you can't. It's a representation. I mean, now I understand what you mean. I took that
yeah.
as... You know, you remember, you can't remember anything, you know. And again, there's my ego.
Well put.
Yeah.
See?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Flaring up.
See, your knife is sharp, and you've got it at your own throat.
Yes, so I do.
Yeah.
Help me.
I could only push the knife.
That's good. That's
yeah.
good.
That's yeah. Good. I won't take the knife from you.
No, but that's
and good. I might not even catch your head once you loosen it from your shoulders.
Once you loose it.
I just may let it drop to the floor, you know, send you like a postcard. Right? Yeah. There's no hope for any of us when it comes to that. So when you look at your one's capacity to even come up with a cogent and or reliable representation of what present experience actually is, we can get a sense of that's really impossible.
Yeah.
Because we have to make selections from very, very few elements within the entire field to turn those into the things that are viable and or worthwhile remembering, which might define our so-called future behavior. And even that, when it does occur, is occurring more or less randomly and without any willful intervention,
yeah.
like Sammy told us. Yep. So it's not just I'm reaching for a banana or a carrot. It's the way that you're processing present experience and remembering what you think you're remembering is also completely arbitrary and random and not willful.
Yeah.
So when you see that you can't actually render present experience with any accuracy at all, it tells you about how well you can remember shit from the past.
Yeah.
You made it up then, and you're remaking it up now,
yeah.
and the two have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah. But they tell each other.
And yet you can find your keys.
Yeah.
Hit the 7-Eleven and suck down a Slurpee.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Have a Newport out front.
Year and 4 months.
Buy a nickel bag from Dominic and call it a good night. Hey, Dom, Slurpee? Not tonight, man.
trying to cut back on the slurpees.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to cut back on the slurpees myself. I am a fucking slurpee. Whoa. Okay, so still you might notice that there's something that remains in you or as you that wants to get a leg up, wants to get a handle, wants to be in possession of some understanding, perhaps some utility. That's bullshit. Mm-hmm. The yoga, therefore, is seeing how the mantle of a mentation, coordinate creation, and insistence on control is an absolute inviolable joke. It's a joke.
Yeah. There's no way to find peace and happiness.
What's really good is that there's no peace. There is no happiness. Oh. And looking for them, that person is a fool.
Yeah, I am a fool.
That's right. So then you're like, oh, well, fuck me. I'm not waiting for anything anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck this is. I never have. But I always thought I was waiting for something, and I could convince myself that I knew what that was. Hmm. But I realized I'm not waiting for anything anymore. And I'm not, and I don't know what to derive from this.
If you don't mind me interrupting, I'm reading another book now. It's called The Urgency of Change. And I mean, I assumed the book title would be, you know, that would be most of the topic would be him discussing why change is necessary. And I'm actually just realizing now, just having this conversation, putting myself in a position that I wouldn't normally be in, I feel uncomfortable in.
Yeah, so I see there's something to those planets.
A lot. Yeah.
Maybe have you read that book?
No, who's the author?
It's Krishnamurti. Jay.
Krishnamurti.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen him.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Like live in person.
Absolutely.
Yes. I didn't know if you'd been on the internet or what. Or
no. No, I got in. I got in there.
Yeah.
Got in there.
The real deal.
Like, fuck me up, dude.
Yeah.
He was like, okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm starting to think that maybe he's onto something with that, because this.
Yeah.
I feel so.
Be careful with him, though.
Yeah.
He's a trickster, that Krishnamurti.
Why is that?
A, he's a master hypnotist.
Well, that helps.
As we all are, really. Mm. I mean, you know, we're self-hypnotizing and then hypnotizing each other through whatever way we have the privilege of relating. So it's just mass hypnosis everywhere you look. But because he was so intelligent and so articulate and could draw such really luscious, though challenging, right, metaphors, memes from human consciousness, it makes it appear as if he's actually onto something. But what happens is he becomes over you know, the span of, let's say, studying his work.
Okay.
His actual beauty was immediate, urgent, and unadorned. That was the beauty of Krishnamurti, and he was able to convey it. And it was beautiful. What happens in his writings is the muse, Krishnamurti, lights up.
Okay.
And it's bewitching. In a good way. Anything can be bewitching. If you're into Byron Katie, she will take you on a ride. If you're into Thich Nhat Hanh, he will take you on a ride. If you're into...
What about U.G. Krishnamurti?
If you're into U.G. Krishnamurti, he will take you on a ride.
You ever seen him live?
No. I came really close. I knew friends in Southern California that saw him very frequently. But it just, didn't click.
What's your take on him? I have read a number of his things, like many years, just a couple things, but never really got an opinion of
him. Well, it's all flavor, it's all texture, it's all hypnosis. A person, a teacher, a writing, a body of metaphor, history, spiritual, interesting thinking. It's all, I mean, it's lovely, right? It's effusive and it really, like, whoa, it's like candy. And or but, depending on how you want to play with it, and or but, your nature is already pristine and unassailable and unadorned. I mean, now, always.
From the beginning?
There was no beginning. It's just that nature. It's just the way this is. Mm. It's the emptiness hiding behind the form. So you can take yourself on a journey if it's your karmic predilection to take yourself on a journey, and no one can stop that anyway. Mm-hmm. So journey forth, Pat Wand. Right?
Sweet.
Yeah. And all along that journey, you can also just, you know, keep it in the back of your mind, or you can smell it at the tip of your nose that this is unadorned and you need do nothing. And if there are secrets, and there are none, they will all be revealed to you. You can just chill so the fuck out that you have outwitted every spiritual secret that could ever be told just where you sit. Then everyone can just fuck off. You get it?
Well put.
So you can immerse yourself in the trickster Krishnamurti. But if you were to take it all the way down, like a moment ago we talked about timelessness, right? Mm-hmm. The moment we had what was the name of chapter 3? Something.
Completely in... permanent.
Yes, complete impermanence.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. So, chapter 4 is fuck you, Krishnamurti.
I'm still going to read that book.
No, yeah, I'm not saying you shouldn't. I know. I'm not saying you shouldn't. The karma of where you're going and what's going to saturate your consciousness, not in your control, not in my control, not in anyone's control. It's going to run its course. It's going to become fully sated. Mm-hmm. And along the way of becoming fully sated, it has never lost the instinct of its own emptiness. So whatever you're doing for sport. You're already unconditioned.
You can tell because this is so fun.
It is. This is.
No, I meant life as a whole.
Life in general. Yeah, no, that's, oh man, that's a hell of a trip. Mm-hmm, yeah.
A mind is a visitation. Mm-hmm. Right? The movement of assembly of a self in space-time as body-mind with appointments and things to avoid or things to get more of. That is a presently appearing or refusing hypnosis.
The first night, man, jeez. I'm serious. This is great. This is wonderful. Thank you so much for the experience.
It's you. It's you.
Hmm. I can't argue with that, yeah.
Yeah, I was super nervous the first time I came here.
Yeah.
I had like a... My anxiety was like not good at the time. Mm. Being an introvert and the group is much bigger.
No, oh, yeah,
it was
yeah.
Like, oh, I guess there was probably about maybe 6 or 8 people at least when I was...
Yeah, they've all since died.
They've all since died. I would say
I would be a lot more quiet if that was the case.
don't let those fools intimidate you.
Yeah, no, but it's tough. It's, you know, that's the whole new experience thing.
But that's why I think it puts your brain into that mush that allows you to see a little bit clearer. I don't know.
Look, you see where you go? You go to vague. Mm. Right? Vague is just an ocean of useless metaphor. Right? So you could say there's two modes. Of course, there's variability, you know, variation that can't be counted or accounted for. Two basic modes. You're either in vague, which means you're streaming in the hallucination of implication. You've got ideas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel that way when I say that, when I say clear. I feel like that's where I'm going, because that's where I'm going.
That's right. Yeah.
But
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Third gear into vague.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The engine is just roaring. Yeah. Pop it into fourth, asshole. I'm not sure I want to go into vague. Go ahead, pop it into fourth. Now, what's the other realm? Not that it's another realm. That's not vague. Right? What's not vague? Fuck. Just this. Nothing vague about it.
The present.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is no the present. There's just yikes. So it's just like, fuck. That's not vague.
I don't know if I understand.
The intimate immediacy of this is not vague. Mm-hmm. Once you start considering it having a genesis or an implication, now you're fucked in vague.
We can't call that the present time.
You can't call anything the present time. There is no present time.
Mm. Because like you said, it's...
Look at the streaming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When have you ever been able to put on the brakes and actually spend a moment in the present?
Mm.
You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything you say about the so-called present is just another set of ideas. But like reading Krishnamurti, you're welcome to have as many of those as you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is the red carpet to vague. You're taking the red carpet to vague in your ruby fucking slippers.
I remember trying to prove to somebody in grade school, I can't remember if it was middle or high school, that the present tense didn't exist.
See?
It couldn't logically
You're
exist.
So ahead of me on this. You've been at this since you were in the third grade.
Well,
yeah.
If only I stuck on that.
It comes and goes.
But and here I go again with that. If only, you know, then.
But that's how. But you can say that's the delightful nature of a personality.
Mm.
How you dream.
Mm.
How you conjure things. What's humorous to you? How you seduce other people into affection.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I can't just be a benevolent zombie.
Well, that is a benevolent zombie.
Well, yeah.
Because as you're doing that, you're under no illusion of belief. Yeah. I mean, you're just pure affection.
Yeah.
Dreaming, streaming, iterative, interactive, improvisational affection.
Cool.
Yeah. Wow. Whee. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that affection is emptiness. It has no boundary. Nothing is compelling it.
Yeah. It just comes and goes.
That's right. You're like being on some really good acid or mushrooms or something. You're literally dripping with affection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you can find, and that's all you are.
Mm.
For some, it could be, you know, demonstrative or, you know, a good Krishnamurti with a pipe and some cognac. The urgency of change.
Yes.
Marvelous point, Kay. Marvelous point.
Kay.
That's really what it is.
Yeah.
Wow. Marvelous point, B. I love this Buddhism. He was a mighty fine fellow. Oh, Anicca, Anatta. Oh, Dukkha. Oh, I like that Dukkha. Mary, you should come read this. You think these fuckers have anything actual to say? They don't. They don't. It's just you, you know, smoking some Latakia with some 12-year-old cognac in your smoking jacket in the Pine Lodge.
In my study.
In your study in the Pine Lodge. You know, moose grazing outside your window as you reach for your shotgun. Yeah. Love this. Love this, J. Love this, K. Fantastic. Think I'll slaughter a lamb. Think I'll do some judge your neighbors and turn it around. What do you say? Dalai Lama sounds nice. Or you could go to the sports bar. So the myth, the fundamental myth, which is what one's mental illness tends to revolve around. And let's face it, mental illness can be, you know, quite a gnarly motherfucker. But you see, it's like it's like a elemental, you know, that's conjuring the smoky image of yourself, you know, individuated. It's a smoky apparition that can only appear to latch on through the hook of individuation. I mean, if you've got some serious shit going on, you know, you need Haldol and a padded room. You know, we get that. That happens.
What's Haldol?
Haldol is an antipsychotic, apparently highly addictive.
Oh,
it's
yeah?
used to flatline, you know, unpredictable people in an outpatient scenarios. I'm not sure how often it's used these days.
Mm. Get you high?
Not in the way you'd want to be. No. I'm dated when it comes to, you know, psychiatric pharmacology. I just remember the shit I used to smoke.
Yeah. Just trying to broaden my horizons here.
Yeah. Now you become more adroit at an effortless discernment that is capable then of turning into the texture of presence and being disinterested in vague, namely representation or content. So you're a samurai in your own experience. You know, you hold up your beautifully polished sword right on vague, and you see that it's just empty. There's nothing there. And so you remain then, or you learn what it's like to be alert without content, alert without destination. Yeah, your sword has no reflection. And that changes your brain chemistry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It changes your brain chemistry. And it's not a mental effort. It's, you know, it's more like an ascension. It's more like a surrender, you know? But though there's nothing to surrender, your curiosity and your affection, you know, they merge on a DNA helix and you're toasted. You're toasted because you're so curious about this and you're just dripping with so much affection. There's just no room for you in that. And so you let that go. You don't try to reconstruct yourself or bring yourself along for the ride. You know, you immolate without resistance. Yeah. And that's present experience. On tap. Immolating without resistance is what this is. On tap. Any intermediary is going to be, you know, a nuisance.
What do you mean by that?
Anything that you might use as an amplifier or a vehicle,
okay,
is a nuisance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you are already that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. You are unadorned affection. And there are no secrets, so you're not interested in finding any. You see? There's no secret.
Yeah.
There's no secular reality. nothing is being hidden from you.
Yeah.
Nice. There's nothing to find. No one to find it. Whatever appears, appears of its own nature. And your you could say, seat, your asan, is just dripping with affection. You don't have a dog in the fight. Mm-hmm. Then you can still function. Or not. And if you become less functional, we hope you've got good friends. But you won't necessarily mind. Undefended. All the way down. Undefended all the way down. No mind, no belief, no superstition, no body, no memories, no sentimentality, no belongings, no insistence for the next breath. Then you're not lacking. You can't be lacking. You only lack when you imagine there's something other than this.
To be lacked of.
That's right. That's right. And that comes around and goes around. I mean, there's no quarrel there. But you're not actually lacking. Only imaginarily so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now someone can come up with a, you know, a very elaborate defense. Oh, I'm this, and I'm that, and I've been this, and I've been that, and I've searched so long, and I'm aiming for, and I'm tired of, and I hope for, and I've, you know, I've put out, feelers to the universe. Mm-hmm. But you see, this is just, that's vague. All that is in the realm of vague. It's the myth of psychological time. The justification of self, which is just, you know, self-heresy.
Yeah.
So I have nothing to defend. I can't characterize this. Everyone else is welcome, of course, to feel and say what they feel and say. And that's awesome. Like over there, it's a big fucking love fest. More than I can do. It's a love fest. This is, I don't know what this is, man. This is a fucking sharp blade right at your neck. It's just gonna, not only is it going to lop your head off, it will steal consciousness. It will take it from you. Mm. I'm not talking about physical death or anything silly like that. But the loyalty that you place in consciousness as being your own or you of it is gone. This persists, whatever this is and whatever persistence might suggest. But you're no longer a function of anything. You're no longer the consequence of anything. Not Big Bang or anything that's happened since. You're not the consequence of anything. This is not causal. This is acausal, demonstrating profusely, acausally, with no implication, nonstop, with the permission to dream anything you'd like to dream about it, and it won't try to convince you otherwise. What? You see, we become so enamored of trying to accomplish or accommodate something like freedom, we think that there's someone that could benefit by being free. Or free from. But there is no such thing. There is no free from.
Yeah.
Because nothing's really here within all the here-ness. Mm-hmm. It's just streaming affection.
Yeah.
That's all. What, you want to say something about it? Fantastic. Write a poem. Write a book. Tell everyone. They'll love you. You're lovable. That's what a fantastic. I'm making a living free associating. Nice. You know?
Yeah.
Sure. Whatever. Or working at the 7-Eleven. The regular shuffle in, you know exactly what kind of cigarette brand they smoke.
What is so funny? What?
Nothing. Nothing's funny. Everything is funny. The laugh has no object. That's what's funny. The giggling is the recognition that there's no object.
Mm.
Yeah. No, it's like rolling, giggling, because there's no object.
Mm.
And there's, you know, from time to time, you're certainly welcome to express whatever joy you might feel like expressing when you discover nothing ever happened to you.
And I'm free to have to put something to it.
Yes.
To want to put something to it.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Metaphor up.
Who lit that candle?
Is there a candle that's lit?
Yeah, right. It looks like it's lit. See, it's going a little bit there.
I wonder if it's an electric candle.
That's what I thought, but I don't...
Because a real candle wouldn't keep burning if it were like that, would it?
I thought, I wonder, like, if someone just left it, or...
Well, let's check it out at some point.
Yeah.
Because they all look to be very uniform in shape, like they're a pile of electric candles.
That's what I thought it might be, but...
Or it might burn the building down.
That's what I also thought.
We'll make sure we're not here when that happens. Hey, who was the last one to use the yellow barn? Why was it that meeting? When Krishnamurti starts teaching in this wonderful way that he teaches, kind of inspiring, you know, I would say, young manner.
Hmm.
See, the dilemma is in his body of teaching that there's too much, my bias, of course, too much, you could say, unintended emphasis on the viability of the seeker.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you go to, let's say, near Sagadatta, which is where, you know, many of us career seekers, you know, were kind of like heading in a weird direction, you know, as certain people came on the scene to read, you know, you and like, where'd you go next? And where'd you go next? And so Krishnamurti was, you know, thrilling and profound. I mean, you could change your IQ.
Yeah.
You know, if you had the gusto to read that shit, it would actually change your IQ, and it could hurt. As your IQ goes up, it hurts. It's painful. That's, you're reading him, and you're like, I really want to understand this. I got to go back a page.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. You mean, whoa. And then it starts to drip into you as you're following him, cascading with him in a set of, you know, curious and challenging, call them psycho-spiritual memes,
mm-hmm.
which are opening your IQ to things you had not considered. And now you're framing your experience in a different light. And that hurts, but you can't put it down. It hurts in a good way. The dilemma is that it inadvertently to, you know, let's just say a younger person beginning to pick up that scent, is that by virtue of the urgency and the young nature of his body of work, it overemphasizes the illusion of the seeker.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then you become like so many of his failed students became, far so many. They came up short. They came up short. Because the ones that didn't understand him, it was easy to discard him. They didn't want their IQ to hurt. So they put him down. The others really wanted to take it, but inadvertently they built a prison of Krishnamurtiism in their own minds. When Krishnamurti himself would emphasize over and over again, don't make me the authority.
Mm.
But because he was so articulate in the way that he was,
yeah.
building his, you know, curious vehicles for liberation, you can't help of Krishnamurti, made out of Krishnamurti blocks.
Yeah.
And so many of his, you know, students, mature ones, they got nowhere. They became, well, scholarly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned very well from this election specifically that it's hard to get the whole picture when you don't listen to people that you don't agree with, or, you know, you don't listen to things that you don't want to hear.
Yeah. I think that that challenge of human communication in the current age is going to get more and more distorted.
What do you mean by distorted? harder, more difficult. Yeah. That's scary because I feel like it's a bitch right now.
I appreciate your intuition. I think so. Well, you know, there are other call it, you know, psychic and Gaiac pressures mounting. But I don't want to start sounding like my friends over in the other room. But, you know, yeah, you can feel it. You can see certain, you know, Gaiac pressures mounting.
Oh, yeah.
And the impact that that has on the, let's call it the collective unconsciousness of a species called human. But we'll see. A bunch of gals took their canoes from Washington State to the shores of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Native American women canoed from Washington State across whatever waterways were available to them to get to the Dakota Access site. And you're like, consciousness is fighting back, man. I was like digging it. You know, you see something courageous happen in the midst of a loveless, frightened mindset. And you can feel the, you know, the affection of it. And that's, you know, what we're looking at. That's what we're looking at. You know, blatant demagoguery, which is of the nature of consumption and anger, blame, accusation, right? Repression. That's the voice. And, you know, a gesture of 1,000 miles in a skinned canoe, right? Showing up to protect sacred lands.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, maybe there's a chance. You know, you can feel them both.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool. And that same empathy, right, is none other than the empathy for your own consciousness. The forces in us that will cling to the refreshment of space, time, and creaturehood, and the other forces in us that are inconceivable, heading straight into the mouth of inconceivability. Presence or shared attention is a portal and the fulfillment of trans-temporal communion.
Say that one more time.
Yes. Presence, shared attention, is the portal, a wormhole, and the fulfillment of trans-temporal communion.
And what do you mean by transtemporal communion?
Transtemporal means this is not in the present, nor is it bound by a past, or does it have any future implication. So it's transtemporal, beyond, right, the boundary field of anything that can be found in past or future.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as communion, it is itself.
Okay.
This is itself. No secrets, no authority, nothing actually to be discovered. Through what we call the mind, which is grasping and interpretive, restless by nature, the mind always imagines that it is something, that there's something other than it. Mm-hmm. And that something, if not many things, can be found and or assimilated, like the Borg, right? Resistance is futile, we are the Borg, assimilate. That's your fucking mind.
Well,
Really?
It is. Yeah.
It is. It's crazy, man. Fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fine. Mind is cool. Look what it's capable of. I mean, it's very formidable, very articulate. You wouldn't kick it out of bed. I might ask it to sleep over a second night. Hey, I dig you.
Expensive wine.
Yeah, I dig you. Want to go out? Want to go bowling? Come on. That's you and me chill. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Resistance is futile. We will assimilate you. We are the Borg. Okay. Rock on. When you see that you can't actually say anything useful about present experience, you're released. Otherwise, you're still holding out. You're still holding out. Imagine something's going to happen after this. And that you'll hopefully have something to do with it. But you won't.
This makes you laugh a lot.
It does.
That makes me laugh.
It's the contrast, you see.
I almost envy your outlook.
Inwardly, you see the contrast between the person you knew as yourself.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And this.
Yeah. What's happening? Yeah, what the hell's happening? I mean, otherwise I wouldn't be so confused. I wouldn't feel like I was so confused.
Yeah. The confusion is, you could say, a function of a sense of identity hoping for durability or future contrasted with its memory of itself. Mm-hmm. That's the confusion.
Yeah, it's like layers of filters.
Yes, it's multi-layered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, because we pour into the next moment effortlessly, improvisationally, spontaneously, impersonally, with no volition at all. And after saying that, it just doesn't stop. You see, it just doesn't quit. The evaporative nature and the novel and evaporative nature of experiencing just doesn't quit. And yet, if we approach it from the point of view of a fixity as entity, as self, as behavior, as longing, as the end of sorrow or the end of suffering, well, you've already created too much bacon fat. And if that's released, then all the things that you thought you might benefit from by craving them, they all disappear in a hoof and a poof and a Hufflepuff.
Nice.
They're just gone. Yeah. So it's never, you never become free from anything. You never attain to freedom because there is no such thing.
Hmm.
There's just... Fuck. What the fuck is this? Really, it's like walking out of the capsule on a new terrain, you know, after landing on a spaceship you never remembered getting on in the first place. And all of a sudden, you know, the door goes, shh, and you know, there's a plank, and you walk out there, and there's this, and you're like, I've never seen this before. Yeah, you're on a new planet.
Sounds like it.
Sounds like it. They're all coming to visit. Experiencing is remarkably sensual, remarkably engaging. I mean, it's blissful. You know, it's ecstatic. Experiencing itself is ecstatic. Even if I'm having a shitty day or being plagued by anxiety or uncertain about 1,000 things and really seriously suffering, you know, physically and in other respects, I'm still dwelling in a bliss field. If I take my own life, you could say lights out on the bliss field, right? If someone's gotten to the point where the despair of living was, you know, so excruciating or so meaningless, that there was nothing at all holding them even open for the novelty of what might be next, well, you could say that, you know, their bliss enzymes just ran out.
Mm-hmm.
Just ran out. And they were like, not happy, not unhappy. I ain't got no interest in nothing anymore. which not necessarily a liberating place.
Mm.
You know, that's cool. That happens with varying degrees of despair or by accident, you know, or on purpose or some combination of how, you know, the miracle of sentience can become anaerobic. As it will.
Becomes, yeah. It seems like it always has been.
Yeah, I mean, you're just like a walking fertilizer farm, you know, puffing methane out your ass. And all the maggots are like, we'll get him. Yeah.
My girlfriend can attest to that one.
Yeah, that's right. Be the first one to tell you. You're nothing but a maggot farm, farting all the time, methane factory with nothing interesting to say.
Yeah.
Honey, you're turning me on.
That is definitely.
Don't make me come over there.
That's awesome.
You got my number. Oh, go, Pisces. It's your birthday. See how easy it is for us to take ourselves sufficiently seriously that we imagine we're in a condition.
It's incredibly easy.
So much so. Yeah, I didn't even notice. Then.
Yeah, see? That's right. Which is what I think Sam was really getting to. If we take Sam deeper than I think Sam might even be prepared to go, it's not just about volition. It's about what you just said. I didn't even notice. I didn't even notice that I had become, you know, a durable apparition to myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really deep. It's really unnerving. It's really unnerving to see, like, really happening all by itself. Chapter 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. Actual experience is, from the point of view of the muggle, meaning, you know, I mean my, right? This is really unnerving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, come on, you gotta laugh about it now.
Yeah, you
never
otherwise,
know. I can't do it at all.
I know. You never know what's on cue. None of this means that you know, can't or shouldn't apply yourself to Krishnamurti or, you know, mindfulness or shamanic investigation or tratak or candle burning or go on a mono diet or take ayahuasca or, you know, go to 50 meetings in 50 days. Right? There's nothing that interferes with it.
Hmm.
Yeah, so you're welcome to, you know, reach out for whatever interests you with the mood and the time and the, you know, the impulse to do so. Mm-hmm. Just for fun, just for a vehicle of, you know, affection. You could say everything that you do, even if it's the most mundane, repetitive thing or nothing at all, it's still a form of worship.
Mm.
You could say all that anyone's ever doing is deep worship, even if they're completely unconscious and, you know, on the dark side of things. It's still worship.
Mm.
Yeah. It could be scary. There are genocides. You know, serious climate people are like, they're packing for Mars already, even though they know there won't be a ship in time. They're out of here. You know, Stephen Hawking gave us 1,000 years, and he should know. He's Stephen Hawking. He speaks through a voice processor. You know, someone else may give us 200 years. Someone else in the know might say, you know, 10 and counting. You're like, ah, oh, that can't be true. We'll wiggle our way out of this mess somehow. You know, and then others are like, oh, there's nowhere to go. It's lights out for the species in 10. And you're like, wait, someone just gave me 10 years to live. But, all right.
Yeah. You know? I'm down.
Yeah. Someone just gave me 10 years to live. I am devastated. Mm. You know, Stephen Hawking gives you 1,000. You're like, well, it's not going to bother me. Me, my family, whoever I think I love and would like to see to the end of my days will still be around. There's no threat there. That's cool. 1,000, I'll take it. If someone says you've got 10, then you're like, God, everything I know in my lifetime is going to be gone. Perhaps under egregious and unpredictable circumstances because of the rapid onset of climate disruption.
Uh-huh.
You're like, well, I'm not ready for that. No. I'm not ready for that. I don't know how to relate to that. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so this, you know, this yoga is, it's like that in a way, but there's no, let's say, threat of the cessation of your, you know, physical vitality. Yeah, there's no threat to you, whether it's 1,000 years to go or 10 years to go, or there's no threat to you. Consciousness is apparitional. Magnificently so, lusciously so, blissfully so. Consciousness is apparitional. But if you're not made of it, you're not made of it. So everything is beautiful for as long as it appears to last.
Huh.
With no regret and no clinging. So there's this fun juxtaposition, right? Of the ascendant and the biologic imperative, right? The ascendancy of no risk to self at all, no risk to body, no risk to universe, no risk to species. Not that it'll last, but there's no risk to it.
Hmm.
There's nothing at risk. That's the ascendant. There's nothing at risk. And the other, which gets, you know, understandably gloomy or resistant or defiant about, you know, anything that could be taken from you. All right. It's a subroutine. But you see, what's so much fun is that you don't learn anything. God, you don't learn anything. You don't get to a place. You never become convinced of anything. You see, that nagging sense of being, you know, centric, consciousness-centric,
yeah,
of the nature of body, mind, and experiencer, imagines that he, she, or it will learn, will discover, will find out, will rest in, will have peace, will, right? No, that's not what this is. The myth of, you know, call it personal viability, which is emptiness, like we were talking about. It's just perfectly empty. There's no liability here. There's no viability or liability here. Oh my goodness. But it's not like you've learned anything, you see? Someone asks you, what do you know? What did you discover? You seem to be so weird, you're laughing at yourself all the time. What's wrong with you? You know, you couldn't say, well, because of this or that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I should go to another room.
Yeah.
You see, you don't actually discover anything. How much fun is that? That you don't actually discover anything. Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see, you never figure anything out. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. It's not possible to gain any knowledge. It's just pure sacred bliss.
Yeah.
Oh, no knowledge. No. Nothing to find. No. Nothing to become. No. Nothing to correct. No. Can't find anything at all. That's your release. acausal and not dependent on anything at all. Oh, fuck you, Krishnamurti.
Chapter 7.
Right.
Wait, that was the same title as chapter
7. Yeah. It's okay.
Back to that.
That's right.
Whole new chapter, same title.
Because, like, that's just our memory of the chapter 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Hmm.
My book is so kick-ass, guys.
It's good.
It's awesome.
I want to read it.
Yeah, me too.
It's going to be good. Move over in your saga, Dada. So, see, Nirsagadatta Maharaj's teaching from the Navranant Sampradaya, where I always mix this stuff up, who could remember this stuff. His guru, Nirsagadatta's guru, was I forget his name too, but it was a good name. He's got his guru's name is a cool name. He would just sit on a rock, you know, with a beedi. He wouldn't even smoke the beedi. But he would sit on a rock. That was the teaching. You didn't have to say, I'm sitting on this rock smoking this beedi. That was already too much. You see? It was too much if he or anyone were to say, oh, that's my guru. He's sitting on a rock smoking a beedi. No, that was way too much. It's much less than that. And Nirsagadatta was like, I want what that guy has. Whatever that is, I want that. Yeah, and got it, actually, though there's nothing to get. Yeah. So there was an erasure, you see, in that tradition. They called that the bird, was bird yoga or something like that. Yeah, the path of the bird. Yeah, light, right? No substance. Light, no substance. Yeah. That's where you could say the Advaita, so-called, you know, modern wave of Advaita, unfolded. Not just, of course, with those two guys, but, you know, a lot since then. But if you go into certain teachings that emphasize your life in the world, empowerment, you know, healing, the way that you're thinking or believing or thinking, those are all dead ends.
Yeah.
Because they will continue to reinforce the illusion of your own viability, or that the way that you feel about things amounts to something. So for as long as one imagines the way that he or she feels about things has amounted to something, then you go to the teachings that attempt to cleanse you of your ill feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's cool. For some folks, that's a good place to hang, and probably for a while. And you can actually do them concurrently, which is kind of a wild ride.
Mm.
You can attend to the, let's say, the karmic, you know, wounds, the karmic scars that can still be, let's say, interfering, you know, with your laughter, with your ease in the world. So you can give them some attention, you know, like Carlos had to wrestle his ally, which just turned out to be a moth, or the moth would have killed him, right? And he was wrestled that ally, and he was changed, you know, profoundly. So you wrestle with your allies. And you could say you heal in a way through that engagement, through that karmic, right, engagement. Mm-hmm. And while that's going on, you're also, you're pristine.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of ways to, you know, run this sundial down.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like what's happened with me. Coming here and getting involved in politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for some, you know, folks, as their, the enzyme of being themselves is just consumed, then, you know, like Frank Zappa said, you know, there's not much cosmic debris remaining. Very little cosmic debris. So then, you know, the life starts to look a little more, you know, sanguine, kickback, uncomplicated.
I love Frank Zappa.
Yeah. Smart.
Yeah. I didn't notice that growing up, I don't think.
I understand. Yeah. I've seen Dweezil many times. It's very good.
My dad said he saw him live. That must have been crazy.
Frank?
Yeah.
I did.
Did you?
Fucked me up.
Yeah.
Fuck. Billy the Mountain Tour with Flo and Eddie. Stony Brook. It was crazy. I mean, my IQ hurt. It was so good. Call any vegetable, and the chances are good that the vegetable will respond to you. Shoot, shoot, shoot. La, 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 la. The vegetable will respond to you. I was like, this is heaven. I'm in heaven.
God, I like heaven. Watch out where the huskies go, personally.
Yeah.
Don't you eat that yellow
stuff. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want it to end. I could have died listening to Frank Zappa that night and for the rest of my life. It was that good.
Oh.
Yeah. Thanks, Frank.
What are you thinking about?
One is bathed in simplicity. Yeah, bathed in simplicity. The sacred has no representation. So you're just... Right, you're free of any articulation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. and there's no hooray or hurrah. There's no reference to anything in the past that may have felt injurious. See, because it's not the resolution of events or circumstances, or the conditioning, you know, of a body. It's not. So there's no hooray or hurrah, you see, because it's so completely, right, beyond the perimeter of imagined conception. But it's not like it's that far beyond, because it's just this. It's just here. You see, it's not any place else.
Yeah, that's the crippling irony in it all.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's chapter 8. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
The crippling irony of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of it.
Yeah. So in a sense, you know, you're playing around with call it an orb, you know, like a golden orb. And that orb can draw you into a realm of representation, hypnosis, metaphor, and implication.
Mm-hmm.
With great feeling and great, you know, pathos of all kinds. And it does so with just the slightest touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a world, and there's you in the world, and there's everything, and you don't know how much you can handle, and you figure out what it is you think you can handle, and then you operate as a hypnotic apparition within this little thimble of nothing. But the orb gives you a sense that, oh yeah, this is a big deal, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, orb is like, the orb it's take it away. You have to, you're yelling at the orb, take it away, I can't handle that, that this is actually something.
Yeah.
That there's implication, or that I came from a place, or I'm going to a place, or that I have to navigate between one and the other. Please take it away. The orb says, okay.
I know. And it doesn't help.
Yeah, and the orb says, okay, and then magically it does. It takes it away. Yeah.
That's some funny shit.
Man. It's really funny. But most people holding on to the orb are like, I'm not willing to give this up. Oh, magical orb, just give me more of myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And the orb's like, okay. Good. The orb is the fountain of anything.
The orb is good to you.
The orb is the fountain of everything found and nothing found. Yeah. Same orb. It depends what you ask of the orb.
Yeah, it gives you what you want.
Gives you what you want. Yeah. Oh, orb, I can't stand it anymore, being separate, being someone, having a mind and time. The implication of it all is just really just too excruciating. I beg you, take it away. The orb says, okay. It will relieve you of it. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really splendid orb. The wish, Prahlad, one of my gurus, my whatever guru,
right?
He sat under a big tree, an elm tree or something, in some place, and we were in Hopewell Junction, New York, or something like that. That's on some estate, and Prahlad was there having come to visit from India, and he was sitting under this giant elm tree or something, and a big leaf just went flonk and landed on his head, and he just laughed. He was laughing. He grabbed the leaf. He said, it's the Kalpataru tree, the wish fulfilling tree. He was just in the ecstasy of it. It's the wish fulfilling tree. That's the orb. This is unconditioned. Right now. Always unconditioned. It's not fulfilling itself. There are no planets. There is no moon. There is no future. There's nothing. It's not actually fulfilling itself because it's done. And yet the orb can make it look like there's, implication, causal implication from Big Bang on up to, Whopper Wednesday.
I thought you were going to say President Trump, President-elect Trump.
Same.
Yeah. All the way up.
That bounce all the way up to Whopper Wednesday.
I feel great right now.
All right, then.
I just felt like expressing that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, you spend a little time on this ocean liner, and. Yep. Cocktail Frank's on the Lido deck.
This one's past me. What is this, a movie?
Cruise ship?
Love boat,
Well, it's us. They're serving cocktail franks on the Lido deck. Yeah. Oh, cocktail franks on the Lido deck?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, then there'll be like, a comic and some dancing people. Then there's the late night bar, half price. Yeah. Phew. Tomorrow we land in Granada.
Any viewers?
Oh, viewers?
Suzanne in there?
It says three.
Oh, wow.
Three viewers.
Wow, tonight.
It's probably Krishnamurti, Buddha, and Jay Krishnamurti.
Somebody's waiting for the...
Oh, the unicorn. Yeah, they're waiting for the unicorn. I don't know if we'll ever do that again. That might have been a one-off. This is the discernment, right, of the jnani. The discernment of the jnani is the awakening of the rainbow body. They're the same. One recognizes the texture of presence itself. Holy shit. Mind isn't triggered, you see? There's no imagination going on. Right? Pure intimacy is just this. It's the texture of presence itself. And you learn how to sip from it. It has nothing to do with meditation, at least in the ways meditation is typically, right, you know, taught and practiced. Presence, right? Presence is pristine, unadulterated. It has no implication. It's emptiness. And yet, you know, its fecund and expressive nature is unstoppable. No daydream. Nothing's being derived. It's not the resolution of thought, see? It's not the resolution of mind. It's just, those have dropped out. Right? Apparition drops out. Affection without an object. Huh. No plans, no orientation. Yeah. The movement of virtuality is, you know, just not present. Oh. Oh. So you're fulfilled. You're fulfilled by emptiness itself, not ever by anything found.
Yeah.
And that's embedded, that's systemic. Huh. Huh. No object. You're baffled, you know. How did the unending desire for something to be found just go away? What?
Yeah, because it's just as impermanent as everything else. That's why.
There may be a reason. There may not be.
Mm.
Yeah. See, it's so washed clean. There is no reason.
Yeah.
It's that clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. The impermanence only has relevance to the imagination of its opposite. There's neither.
Yeah, that crippling irony we were talking about.
It's cool. It's cool. But that's why having, you know, this kind of discussion or conversation or discovery over and over again kind of assists you to out the hidden nature of one's crippling irony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see it more clearly, more clearly, and more clearly.
Right.
By seeing it more clearly and more intimately. And intimately means texturally intimately. We're not hoping to uncover anyone's, you know, baggage or shadow or stuff. No, no, the intimacy is far more devastating than that, actually. It's like, oh, it's the intimacy of I got nothing.
Yeah.
It's not the resolution of, you know, your shadow.
No,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just like, oh, ah, completely wiped clean. It has no opposite, right? It has no cause. It has no implication.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Krishnamurti should be reading you.
Why not?
He probably is. There you go. He probably is. The young Krishnamurti's reading you. Yeah. That's how we dance through life, like a binary star system. He reads me, I read him. He reads me, I read him. And we just keep waking up, life after life after life after life, in an endless loop. What fun. Yeah.
What is the worst sentence? You die in 10 years or you never die?
Never. Never is much worse.
Just need to put some amnesia in between to get through that one.
That's right. That's what we're banking on. It's the amnesia. Yeah. And you could say that, you know, neither of those boundary conditions, as in just around the corner or never, really can intimidate you. Transtemporal communion is the discovery that you're not a creature.
But rather... you tell me. Yeah,
that,
I get
that.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you see Arrival, the film?
Mm-mm. Oh, no. Is that the one with Amy Adams?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, I haven't seen that.
That's some point.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I do like Amy Adams.
She's babe.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah. He's cute, too, that Jeremy Remmer.
Jeremy Remmer. What else was he in?
Well, in the Marvel comics, he's the bow and arrow guy.
Oh, okay.
Jeremy Remmer, right?
He's not a superhero.
Hawkeye or whatever.
Hawkeye. He's Hawkeye.
Yeah, okay.
And I think the first time I saw him in film, he was scary and good. He was in that film with Ben Affleck when they were robbing banks in Boston.
Yeah. What was that called?
Johnstown or something?
Yeah.
A town that's all
Brooklyn, Brookston, whatever. Yeah, it was the name of the town. It was the name of the movie, right?
I remember it.
Yeah. Jeremy Remmer was in his gang. He was scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was also, of course, in several of Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible movies.
Okay. I remember him in those.
On the Mission Impossible team. I think I might be in love with him. But Arrival, yeah, it's just a lot of really sweet implication there. Really poignant material there.
Yeah.
dealing with all of these issues, like as in time and never and 10 years to go and, you know, an extraterrestrial intelligence appears uninvited, spontaneously out of nowhere, right? Threat, no threat. How do we communicate or find even, you know, a shared language to be able to, because language is all representative. Red means what exactly? Apple means what exactly? Krishnamurti means what exactly? So you're coming in touch with an intimate encounter with an intelligence that apparently got here from like someplace else, and you're completely empathetic, right? If you're not scared out of your mind, and you're like, I'd really like to talk to you, but I don't know how, right?
Yeah.
And so there's that discovery, and that's there's a fitful process there. And that's what, you know, that's what this is, because you're learning a new language. One is learning a new language. Like when you first start studying French, well, you're interpreting French through English. And so you learn the French vocabulary through the already present vocabulary. Mm. So you learn the language and the grammar and the pronunciation and the this and the that. And people say, well, you haven't really learned the language until you start dreaming in that language. Right? Your dreams are now, you're dreaming in French because the language is in you. You're no longer processing it through your home language. You've got a representational, confident representational field in that language.
That's an interesting point.
Right?
Yeah.
So here we are, messing around like witches, you know, give me Eye of Toad and some newt, you know, in a big stew. And we're like trying to figure out how do I have an encounter with an inconceivable language, which is myself.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and at first I do yoga, and I read Krishnamurti, and I stand on my head, and I do this, and I do that, because I'm developing a representational language, or a bridge, between that which is inconceivable and my knowledge up to this point.
Yes.
Good. Okay, and while that's happening, including the karma saving, right, when we become lucid in the language of the inconceivable, everyone can just fuck off. Or embraced. Because I'm dreaming in the language of the inconceivable. I'm dreaming in myself. And it's truer as true or truer than true as anything's true, but it has no language, not a human language. And yet, the formidability, the insolubility of this language is your own. No one can take it from you. But you can't write it. You can't speak it. But it's the dearest. Now you're dreaming in French. Monsieur. See, it's a shamanic thing you're in. It's a shamanic pool.
Stirring the pot.
Double, double toil and trouble, man.
Yeah. That's that. An envelope. Yeah, we do collect modest donations that we give to Pebble Hill for the use of the room.
Well, yeah, I didn't tell you about that part.
Yeah.
It's all optional and voluntary.
Take the money.
Yeah, sometimes people take the money, which really works out too, yeah.
What, like random people?
Well, if they can sneak in here. Hey, you folks at home, that was a lot of fun. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.